Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross with you once again. And boy, do we have a lot to go over in this episode of the broadcast. Some good, some not so good. But Rob Ross, I guess we should probably just start with you. How's everything going?
It's going okay. You know, it's been a while. I think the last show that we did was around December 23rd, if my dates are correct. So we've got a lot to catch up on. But I guess the big news around here is that unfortunately on Friday, I was laid off from my job, which I've had for about a year and 4 months. It wasn't wholly unexpected. They had talked about corporate restructuring, and that's exactly what happened. My position was eliminated. So I've gotten my resume out. I've gotten signed on to unemployment. I've been in contact with some of the headhunters I've already been in touch with because I had been looking again. And we just go from here, you know, onward and upward. What more can you do? At this point, there's no sense in getting worked up over it. And there has been one seismic thing that happened since our last conversation, and that is I turned 60 on January 7th. So that is a very unusual thing to actually be able to say. I still haven't gotten used to that. It's odd. I don't, you know, obviously I don't look it. I don't feel it in the grand scheme of things, but to be 60 years old is just odd to me. That's the only word that keeps coming up over and over again. So what can you do? You know, I am already booked for vacation, not only this year, but next year.
Where are you going?
I took the steps. Well, this year, and it's completely booked right down to every little detail, we're going to go to Hilton Head Island. Remember I told you about the Westin on Courtney Campbell?
Oh, yeah.
Causeway? Well, they have a Westin resort and spa on the beach in Hilton Head. So we're right there on the beach. We have a spa day booked. I went on my first local spa day because I had bought myself a certificate a year ago for a full package. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever had in my life. So, you know, we're really looking forward to that. And then next year, we are going on a 7-day cruise to Bermuda.
Nice.
Now, I went to Bermuda as a child on the old Cunard Ambassador, which oddly enough sank. It burned and sank about a year or so afterwards. But we are going on Royal Caribbean cruises. We're going in late August, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, you know, it's I'm thinking about all of the good things that are lying ahead. Latest medical report was, you'll enjoy this one because as well you know about doctors. You know, I went to see the urologist in February, at the beginning of February, every 3 month checkup. I waited, I want to say maybe 40, 45 minutes for him. And they did do a quick bladder scan, which is not painful or intrusive. I guess the nurse practitioner said everything's perfect, which was obviously good news.
Great.
But he comes in and I'm not kidding, $30 for basically maybe 2 minutes of conversation. Hey, how are you? You look good. Thanks a lot. Working out? You look like you've lost weight. Yeah, I have been. He goes, well, everything's good. You look good on the charts. How are you feeling? I feel good. Okay, I'll see you in May. You'll take a blood test before the next May visit. Okay, see you then. I could have stayed home for that. We could have done it over Zoom or Skype or whatever. My
Still,
God.
Though, that is the best kind of news you can get at a doctor's appointment. You're good. You're fine.
Nothing to it. I mean, I do have to go to my regular physician for my every 3.5 month check on. Now, here's the funny thing. I'm going for the blood test on Saturday, May 3rd at 7 a.m. because I actually can schedule it. And once I'm done, you know, I can come home and have breakfast. And then at 11 o'clock, I got to drive out to the physician and go see him because then I get, you know, and then I'll see the urologist the following Friday. So they'll have the results of the blood test by then. So that's kind of where it's at. You know, I am going to I'm going for the first time to the new, even though it's been there for about 3 or 4 years at this point, the new City Winery on April 18th. They're having American Airlines in conjunction with the winery is having a they have these, you know, dinner tastings and pairings. And they have this year they're doing, you know, cities. So it was a choice of Bordeaux or Tuscany. And Liz liked the theme of the Bordeaux one, which is James Bond. So we're going to that. And that should be kind of a nice change of pace.
Very nice.
So, you know, again, I'm just concentrating on the good things. You know, I'm looking at this job loss as a hiccup. And that's really all, you know. So, again, maybe it's the I'm going to use the term loosely here, the wisdom imparted upon me by turning 60. I don't know, but yeah. we'll have to figure that out.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it does suck. I mean, that's the worst part of losing a job is when you lose a job and you didn't do a damn thing wrong, you know. And we've both been through that where it's like, no, my work was as good as it ever was. And, I was performing well, the show was being received well, and I lost the job anyway. And, you know, okay, it's fine when your boss apologizes to you, but it's still, so you're telling me I didn't do anything wrong, but I still lose the job that you gave me. So I feel for you on that front.
You know, I what are you going to do? You know, right. That's really it. What are you going to do? You just dust yourself off and you go on from there. You don't let it eat you alive. You know, the first day you're kind of licking your wounds in the calm and the quiet once you get home, which is exactly what I did. I tried to keep myself occupied in the most normal fashion on a Friday. Come home, do the laundry, you know, little tasks like that yesterday, do the groceries and so on and so forth. Today I've just been watching the usual Sunday marathons of one of our favorite shows collectively, The Food That Built America.
Excellent.
So with new episode at 9 o'clock tonight, by the way. So, you know. Just keeping to a normal routine. And like I said, I'll go to the gym, you know, that'll help. It keeps you fit. It keeps your mind in a good place and, you know, continue to look for jobs and wait and hope and see somebody calls you and you have an interview scheduled or anything. So that's really all that can be done.
Excellent. Well, you know, I have, speaking of TV shows and food-related TV shows, I have something for you to check out because you, on the subject of vacations, we just got back from ours about 3 weeks ago and spent 10 days in Portugal, and it was just the best time I have ever had in my life. I mean, we spent, the idea was that we were going to go for 10 days. We were going to spend the first night in Lisbon, then go to Porto, which is up in the north, for 5 days, and then come back, spend 3 more days in Lisbon, and then fly home. Well, we did spend the first night in Lisbon. Lisbon's fine. It's, you know, great city, but, you know, a little fast-paced for my taste. But other than that, I mean, it was really nice being there. It's one of those places where it's scenic anywhere you look. So that was fine. And then the next day we took the bus up to Porto, and it's about a 3.5 hour bus ride. It's not bad. And it was like a motor coach kind of bus, like kind of like Magic Bus here. It's called Flixbus over there, but it's the same deal. And the great part about it is it's not like Greyhound where they stop every half hour, you know, you just go, you go from one place to another place and you get there. And we stepped off the bus in Porto and we're immediately just, both of us were like, I don't ever want to leave here. I mean, this city is incredible. And it really is. It's, again, very much slower pace. It's right on a river called the Douro. And it's beautiful. Everything about it. I mean, the city is 500 plus years old. So there's all of these old, you know, a lot of Gothic architecture and just these amazing churches and fountains and stuff. And the river itself has 6 bridges that go over top. And it's really high banked, so the bridges are way up off the water, and they do these boat tours underneath all 6 bridges, and they tell you a little bit about each one as you go underneath it. So that was great, and I mean, the food we'll talk about was absolutely incredible, and that brings me to what I want you to do. Anthony Bourdain did an episode of Parts Unknown in Porto. And we ended up eating at one of the restaurants unwittingly. I didn't even know until, you know, we were leaving that he spotlighted in that episode of the show. And I mean, I'm going to make your cholesterol go up by even mentioning this because there's a sandwich that they make there that Porto is famous for called a Francesinha, which means little French girl. And I don't know how it got that name because the thing is anything but small or feminine. So it's thick sliced white bread and 2 layers of sausage, then a layer of ham, then steak, then the top bread, then a sunny side up egg. The entire thing is covered with cheese, melted cheese, and then they put this sauce on it that's made from whiskey, beer, tomatoes, and spices. I mean, it's unbelievable. The thing weighs about 6 pounds. It's it's so good. But Bourdain had one on the show at this same restaurant that we went to. And so, yeah, watch that episode. I think it's from season 9 of Parts Unknown. But the city itself was just, everything about it is set up brilliantly. Hang on, I got an alarm going off. It's probably telling me to talk to you. Anyway, yeah, it's set up brilliantly. Everything is really easy to get to and so cheap. I mean, everything there is so completely inexpensive that there were times where we would go to a restaurant and they'd bring me the bill and I'd go, did you forget to put something on here? Because it can't be this much. It's got to be. And they were like, no, we got everything. That's how much it costs. It's very easy going. It's beautiful. And the weather was perfect. I mean, we were there in February, at the last week of February, and the high every day was right around 60 degrees. And they told me that during the summer, the hottest it ever gets is about 85. And I thought, oh, man, you guys have it knocked here. So, yeah, we Ubered around and took the trains and the metros. And, I mean, it was so easy to do everything that's so hard to do here, you know? But... So what we ended up doing, because we love Porto so much, that we were going to spend 5 days there, we ended up pushing it off to 7 days. We spent 2 extra days at the same hotel in Porto and then just went back to Lisbon the night before we were going to fly home. Stayed at the airport hotel and just took off. Okay. Best time ever. And, I mean, everything there is art and music. And, like, 90% of the port wine in the world comes from Porto. So there's wineries everywhere. In fact, at that lunch... they brought us some port wine at the end. They were like, this is on the house. We want you to try this. And it's so sweet. It's like eating wine candy. You know what I mean? So yeah. And normally anything but white wine causes me real problems. Tannins and I do not get along well. Like cigar smoke bugs the shit out of me. And red wine is tough for me, but the port wine, no problem, not a single problem at all. And, I mean, the people are fantastic. Most everybody speaks English, and it's they're very polite about it. When if you try to speak Portuguese to them and you screw it up, they'll let you know what you did. And it's like everybody is just so completely friendly. So, I could not recommend it highly enough. If you're going on vacation and you want to go to Europe, make sure you make Porto part of the trip.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. You were talking about the sandwich, and I don't want to veer off too far, you know, field, but, you know, there was an episode recently, a rerun of Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods, Delicious Destinations.
Yes.
And it was on Bermuda. So, you know, you talk about sandwiches. My God, there was this one. It's a fish sandwich. I forgot the name of it because it had a kind of a funny name to it, but it's these fish pieces, you know, they're deep fried. They're put on the big thick cuts of bread, but it's raisin bread.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Melted cheese, coleslaw, just a whole host of things. It almost looks like the famous sandwiches from Primanti's of Pittsburgh.
Right.
But this is, you know, indigenous to Bermuda. And I just thought, my God, when we get there, I definitely have to try it out. And of course, the place that he went to happens to be in Hamilton, which is the capital city, which is where the ship will be docked. So that's a huge, huge plus. And, you know, again, what you were saying about sandwiches, it's kind of like how I feel about the Tampa version of the Cuban sandwich versus, you know, Miami's, I guess, more well-known version, because obviously the use of salami in Tampa takes it to a completely different level. I was telling this to my uncle the other day, and now he's going to try and make it himself because he's always had, you know, the standard Miami version of
it.
Yeah,
just the ham and the roast pork, yeah.
And, you know, continuing on about sandwiches, there have been a host of places, especially in New York City, that have opened up that do the gourmet sandwich thing, a plethora of them right here on Staten Island. And there is a place called Anthony's Paninoteca that just – it's an art form with them. I mean, they make sandwiches that are so good, it's almost a religious experience. You want to cry at how amazing they are.
Yeah.
Like, he does a variation of the famous Denick's pork sandwich, you know, the how they've skewered the concept of the Philly cheesesteak, and they do it with the pork, hand-cut provolone, so it's not like even slices, it's just like chopped bits and slabs and broccoli rabe. And Anthony's does it, and oh, dear Lord, how amazing. I mean, his version of the the consummate Italian hero with every form of Italian Italian deli meat on it, and the prosciutto and the roasted peppers and everything on it. You know, it, even though I'm dieting and trying to be very stringent about it, if you said to me right now, let's go over there and get a sandwich, I would say, hang on, let me get my shoes.
Yeah, let's go.
I won't even think twice about it. Yep. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, and on the subject of TV, there's a show, and it's on a couple of the streamers. I think it's on Hulu and it's on YouTube that Jen and I started a little while ago. And it's only 4 episodes. It's called Adolescence. And I found out after we watched it that it's one of the top streaming TV shows right now. It's less than a month old, I think, that it came out. Came out of the UK. And the idea is that you come into the show as this 13-year-old boy is being arrested for murder. And it was a classmate of his, a female, that he stabbed to death. So he's arrested, and then his family, specifically his father, but I mean the entire family obviously is involved in it, has to come to grips with the fact that this 13-year-old boy, his own son, was just arrested for murder. And it goes through the conversations that the boy has with his psychologist, or with the prison psychologist, and with the cops, the interrogation, the whole thing. It's excellent. I mean, I'm not going to tell you too much about what happens during the thing, but the amazing part to me was that this boy, they got to play the lead role. This is the first time he's ever acted, and the kid was fantastic. I mean, I couldn't believe it when Jen told me, oh yeah, that's his first acting job. I thought, no, that can't be right. He's too good and is able to go from a normal conversation like you and I are having right now to being almost completely out of control in seconds and make it believable, where it's not just, oh, all of a sudden, okay, now I have to act mad. It's just, you're following him and going where he's leading you. It's just great. And the writing, I mean, it's British, so the writing is top notch. And what it really deals with more than anything else is what's going on. Because there had been a number of incidents. It's not based on a true story, but there had been a number of incidents over there where these stabbings had occurred. And it was these adolescent boys and girls were their victims. There were like 4 or 5 of them within a year. Mm-hmm. And so the producers got to talking about it with each other and said, you know, we ought to write this. And that's where the idea came from. But yeah, I again, huge recommendation from me, and it's short for a limited series like that. We're used to them, you know, running 9 or 10 episodes. This one is in and out in 4 episodes, and all 4 of them are paced brilliantly. And I think it hits all the right notes with what it's trying to say with the social commentary about what's going on.
You know what you just said about first roles. I have you gotten to see the Holdovers?
No.
Okay. The young guy who's the lead next to Paul Giamatti, that too is his first ever role. And for you, again, like you said, you can't believe that this is his first time acting. Yeah. You know, it's just absolutely superb and believable and likable. And you feel that, I'm going to use the cliche, the sense of empathy with the character. You know, you understand where he's coming from. So it's an interesting thing when you can actually find good younger actors, because it's so hard to come by. And quite frankly, as they get older, they may be great when they're young, but they're not as good or as convincing or compelling as they get older, or just even likable, dare I say. So, you know, nothing's really changed for me TV wise. You know, I tend to watch, I guess, the more history based shows, like, you know, the Food That Built America. I really gotten very fond of watching Bass Pro Shops Major League Fishing World Series. That's on Saturday mornings. There's something really soothing about it. And I haven't been fishing since like 1987, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But I feel so relaxed when I watch it. And that's like the perfect primer for a Saturday morning. You know, have my coffee and watch this. And it's really compelling, you know.
I was like what Brian Regan said about that. It's like, how lazy am I? I'm not even fishing. I'm watching somebody else fish.
it's something. And mind you, Staten Island has a plethora of good fishing right down the street from, is a perfect example of it. And, you know, growing up, my best friend in high school, his family had a dock right there in the marina. So we were always down there, you know, but, you know, you just get away from certain things as you get older. So, you know, it's kind of par for the course like everything else. But, TV and I really just don't have a connection anymore. The same thing applies to movies, although I don't know if we spoke about it on our last episode, but Liz had turned me on to this incredible, and I that's probably understating it, this just magnificent animated film called Flow, which actually wound up winning the Academy Award for Best Animated Film.
I saw that it had won. I know nothing about the movie.
There's no dialogue in it. It's the story of a cat who survives a flood, a black cat who survives a flood and tries to navigate his way through what to do now in the aftermath of this, and he becomes friends with other animals who've also survived it. Again, no dialogue whatsoever. And the music fits the mood and the movement and the tempo of everything. And it is just one of the most touching and beautiful films you will ever sit down to watch. You will be absolutely riveted to this.
Excellent.
It's impossible not to. It was just on again about 2.5-3 hours ago. So I watched it again. It was on HBO. So I thought, okay, I'll watch this again for certain. So,
well, I got one for you too. And it was funny because our morning show host on the radio station is also a film critic. And so he goes to all of the festivals and everything else like that. And I was trying to find the name of the movie so that I didn't get it wrong for him. And looking back at the chat, he had actually been talking to the other people at the radio station about it about 3 months ago, and what a great movie it was, and what a great time he had watching it. And so I was amazed. I was like, wait a minute, you knew this movie? And he said, yeah, how did you know I knew it? I said, I looked back in the chat and I found the whole thing where you were mentioning it. It's a movie called Adult Best Friends. And it's not, it's a comedy. It's a light comedy, but it's more than that. Delaney Buffett, Jimmy Buffett's daughter, was the one who wrote, produced, starred, directed, co-wrote, I should say, with her best friend. And it's in the same way that all of the Judd Apatow movies explore what it means for men to be friends with each other. This does that for women. And the fact that they are best friends kind of informed the writing on it, because I'm sure they put in a lot of autobiographical stuff about, you know, arguments that they had and things like that and how they recovered from that. But independent films, especially independent comedies, have a tendency to be ham-handed with the comedy. This one isn't. There is one character who's way over the top, but it comes back at the end of the movie why he's way over the top. And then it makes his character even funnier because of that. But it's quiet. It's very funny. If I had a knock on it, I would say it took probably 15 minutes to figure out what its pace was going to be. So it's a little bumpy at the beginning, but once it figures it out and starts just going, it's great. And again, it's called Adult Best Friends. There is some of Jimmy Buffett's music in it. He was still alive when they made the movie, but they ended up dedicating it to his memory. And they did a lot of recutting afterwards to put in one of my absolute favorite Buffett songs, One Particular Harbor. And that scene where One Particular Harbor comes up is some of the best filmmaking that I've seen in a very long time.
Well, I think this is a very good point to sort of veer the conversation to where we unfortunately need to go, and that is, you know, loss, because we've lost some very big names.
Yeah.
Not just in film, but in music especially, and we'll get to that in great detail. But today I just heard that Richard Chamberlain passed.
Oh, so, I didn't even hear that yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was 90, so God bless him for, you know, I always thought he was a much better actor than he ever got credited for. I think he was always typecast as Dr. Kildare.
Yep.
But, you know, I do remember when the Thornbirds came out, and that really put him back on the map, because it was just such a, it was groundbreaking for its time for a TV movie.
It was that 81-ish?
The Thornbirds, either 81 or 81, 82, 83 in that time frame. And of course, we lost Gene Hackman in the most bizarre circumstances that we've yet to really figure out and understand. But from what I can, you know, parse from everything that I've heard, it sounds to me like his wife died first.
Yep.
And because he had Alzheimer's, he basically maybe starved to death or he was just not in good shape. And without her there to be able to take care of him, it just was. The one part that I'm still flummoxed by is how the dog died. One dog died and another one was out and about.
Yeah, I had heard, and oh boy, I hope this is true, that the dog that died was in a kennel and didn't have access to food or water. That made it make sense. But yeah, I think they said Hackman's cause of death was a fall, but it may very well have been because he would have spent 6 or 7 days not feeding himself and just got weak and didn't understand what was going on. And that's really, I mean, if anything brings home the poignancy and the sadness of Alzheimer's and dementia, it's that his wife died. I mean, and she died of hantavirus, of all things. And she had tried to reach out a couple of times for a concierge medical service to come out and take care of her. And they kind of missed each other. But there she was, dead on the floor. And he was beyond being able to understand any of that. He didn't know what was happening. And that's just, it robs you of every faculty.
Well, you just brought up the fact, you know, that he it may have been from a fall, and we lost someone who actually I knew a few days ago, and I'm sure you know the name of this gentleman, and it was a very upsetting, amongst the other things that were upsetting this week, Terry Manning, who was one of the Arden Studios group. He was one of the original members of Icewater and Rock City, which of course became Big Star, played keyboards and sang backup vocals on Number One Record. Produced Zeppelin II or co-produced Zeppelin II, a bunch of ZZ Top things and so on and so forth. Just this long, wonderful, storied career, one of the loveliest people you will ever come across. And he fell accidentally at home and passed away on, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. Wednesday was when we got the news from a fall at home at the age of 75. So, you know, that one hits home again because this is somebody I knew. And that's what we're going to talk about now. I mean, for me, there have been a couple of people who we've lost in the last month or two. And the three that really resonate loudest for me was first and foremost David Johansen. I think the last time we spoke a few days later was when the news came out was that he was ill. And I had the pleasure of working with David many times because I worked at a place called Snug Harbor Cultural Center, and he would always come and do the last show of the summer season. His was like the big closing show for the year, and he would come and do it as Buster Poindexter. He was a local guy. You know, he was a Staten Island native, and he was a lovely and funny, funny man. We always had dinner with him while he was there, and one thing he loved to do was always tell jokes. You know how I always bring up Grossinger's?
Yeah.
That's because of him. Because he once said to me, you know, like he'd always sit down at dinner and he goes, okay, good Shabbos. You know what I mean? That was his shtick, you know, and he was a master of shtick. He loved doing shtick. And he goes, you know, I played all these venues time and time again. And the one thing I've never done is, you know, the one thing I want to do, I don't know if I'll ever be able to achieve it. I'm like, what's that? The Catskills. I was like, never played Grossinger's. I'll never get to do it because they're closed now. I'm like, don't worry, boy chick. You'll be able to do it one of these days.
There you go.
I mean, he was just a funny man. And I would see him occasionally on the ferry coming home. He would often be with the late, great Mick Rock, the photographer, because Mick Rock lived up here as well. And he was always very kind and very funny and very sweet. And, you know, he's going to be missed, obviously, just because of the good person that he was, you know. And then we also lost Brian James, who I had the pleasure of meeting and actually drinking with. He was the founding member and original main songwriter and guitarist for The Damned. He's the one who graced the world with New Rose and Neat, Neat, Neat. He was a phenomenal guitar player, very nice man. Again, very funny, very he didn't take his legendary status too seriously when I met him. I mean, he was pretty drunk and fell down, and he was laughing about the whole thing. And he was a great guy. And that was, again, something that completely caught me off guard. And the one that I think was hardest to take because it was such a shock was Rick Buckler, who was the drummer for The Jam, which it sounds so odd to me to think that one of the members of the most important band to come into my life as a teenager is now gone.
Yeah.
He died from apparently a very short illness. Nobody has said what it was specifically. I don't need to know the specifics. All I know is that he's suddenly gone, you know, and that came right on the heels of the announcement that his old rhythm partner, Bruce Foxton, the bass player, had to retire because his hearing has gotten so bad, he's going deaf. So it's either go deaf or stop playing and basically curtail it and save your hearing while you can. It's one of those messages that hits home the fact that you're of an age and so are the people that you grew up with, so to speak, and loved most. And that's been the really hard part about all of this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Rick Buckler was only 69. You know, I'm 60. It's a bitter pill, no pun intended whatsoever, but that's a very bitter pill to swallow.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, there have been so many others. I mean, just within the last couple of weeks, we lost Jesse Colin Young from the Youngbloods. Michelle Trachtenberg, the actress, actress. And, you know, gone way, way too soon.
Soul singer Angie Stone died in a car accident.
Yep. And of course, George Foreman. That was another one just from the last week or so that, so far this year, we're only just now barely 3 months into the year, and we've lost a tremendous number of very, very talented people.
Yeah. And, you know, the year is unfortunately still quote unquote young. So, you know, but, let's very quickly touch on sports and then we'll get to the new music stuff. But, what an aberration of a hockey season this has been for any Ranger fan. I mean, talk about God's gift to inconsistency. You know, they went into Anaheim the other night. They had a 3-goal lead. They managed to blow that lead in the last 2 minutes of the game, go to overtime, and lose. Last night, they had a 6-0 lead and with 2 minutes blew the shutout, but they won the game. I mean, they're terrible. They're embarrassing. I don't want them to make the playoffs because I don't need to watch that kind of an embarrassment. The Mets season has gotten off to a predictably uneven start. At least they've already won a game. It's odd that they're not playing baseball today. They played Thursday, Friday, and yesterday, and no Sunday baseball for the Mets. Everyone else seems to be playing. I don't understand how baseball games are scheduled anymore. It's a little too weird for me, but I'm going into the season with the most minutely cautious amount of optimism, simply because they've already got a lot of injuries, a lot of them being with the pitching staff, you know, so that's an immediate cause for not alarm, but concern at the very least. So, and the Jets at least said goodbye to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, look, it turned out to be he wasn't what we thought we were going to get. We were hoping for the best and we got less than anything. So, you know, it's C'est la vie. I'm really glad that they picked Aaron Glenn to be their coach. I remember when he was playing alongside Wayne Corbett. That was a good team, you know, and a good group of guys. He was a very good choice for the Jets. So there's my take on sports.
And as far as Buffalo is concerned, I mean, the Sabres do what they are doing right now, what they do every year, it seems like, which is as soon as they're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, they start playing awesome hockey. And it's like, guys, the idea is to do that in October and November and December, not to just kick it on all of a sudden when we get into the second half of February.
Don't be spoilers, you know, play better in the season when it counts so you can have the points that'll get you to the playoffs.
Exactly. And with the Bills, I mean, the one real question mark right now is what are they going to do about James Cook? And I don't know. I mean, do they try to land a free agent running back? Do they try to draft a running back and let him go? I have no idea. I mean, he wants a new contract with Buffalo, but I just don't know that the money is there. I will say that the names that they've added so far they've been addressing the right needs. Whether they found the right guys to address those needs, that's another matter entirely. But I mean, you know, and how healthy can Joey Bosa stay? that's, I mean, because Bosa is an amazing player, but you got to keep him healthy. In the last three seasons, he has not played an entire season in any of them.
You know, just as you get older, the more divorced you become from the sports that you love and are so passionate about, because it's the same. You're watching the same thing happen over and over and over again. And yep. Guess what? It becomes like everything else that's ultra repetitive. It's tiresome. So, you know, my take on everything right now, especially with baseball, is let's just wait and see.
Yeah,
that's all, you know.
Right.
So I have, well, I haven't picked up a guitar still. And I am in some fear, not a great deal of being up in arms, but in some fear of having forgotten the predominant amount of songs I've known over the years, c'est la vie, if that is the case. I did start listening again and writing, and I, lo and behold, have pieces up now on both Popdos and MusicTap. The piece that went to Popdos is one that I'm keen on because it's from one of our favorite people, and that would be Mr. Peter Holsapple.
Excellent.
His new solo album is coming out. It's very, of course, wryly titled The Face of 68, which, if you don't know the history of that phrase, it was how they deemed young Peter Frampton in 1968.
That's right.
When he was the guitarist slash pinup boy with The Herd, which was such an unfair thing to do to him because he really always has been a phenomenal, can't use that word, and a phenomenal guitar player more than anything else. But Peter's new album is coming out in a few weeks. I think it comes out April 18th. And it's great. You know, it's him sounding not dissimilar to how he always sounds with the DBs, but it's a very thoughtful record. There's a lot of, I hate to use this phrase, but, you know, as you get older, you have perspective when you write. So there's a lot of autobiographical and much more age thoughtful material and lyrics on there. And the music is just fantastic. I mean, there are things that I would never expected him to do, like rock out with pure balls. You know, you kind of got an inkling of that on the last DB's album with That Time Is Gone and Revolution of the Mind, which was the single that was released in the aftermath of it. But it's just a great record. And, you know, it's the certainly an early favorite for album of the year, quote unquote, from me, you know, in my taste, in my opinion. And that, like I said, that comes out in a few weeks. We also have a brand new album from Bob Mould called Here We Go Crazy.
Oh.
Now, this is the first time he's been on a, quote, major, and I don't even know if you can qualify it anymore as a major label scenario. He's now with BMG. This album is definitely far, I like this record much more than the last one. I just didn't feel any sense of, it was a good record, but it was almost, yeah, I've heard this before. This one, it's, and again, with age, because Mould is going to be 65, you know, when you've come out of the punk rock hardcore scene,
yeah,
and you're somebody who is still looked upon with respect and appreciation for that, you tend to forget, hey, he's older now. He's got other things to say than, you know, I hate the government or my parents suck or whatever it is, you know. So this is a really thoughtful record. It also sounds great. It, you know, I will always stand by this. You know, the second greatest sounding album production wise that I've ever heard was Sugar's debut album, Copper Blue. I mean, that's just a masterpiece upon masterpiece upon masterpiece. The only album that surpasses it is Radio City, you know.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm just glad to see that Bob Mould is still doing what he's doing. And he's, you know, he's doing it now with a bit more temperance, if you will. I don't know if that's the right word to use for it, but we'll use that for now. And finally, we have one of the quirkier bands that has been around for well over two decades from the New York area, and that's Life in a Blender. Now, last year, we premiered a video by them. I premiered another one a week before I did the album review. And this album has been out for over a year now, but I finally received a copy of it and listened to it. And it is an unusual, and I say this in a really positive way, an unusual mixture of styles, sometimes all in the same song. So it keeps you listening. It keeps you interested. It keeps you going, Wow, that's kind of neat. Like, there's one track on there that it reminded me of a cross between this very strange Irish band, very obscure Irish band from the late 80s called Stump, who were the in and of themselves influenced by Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. So you know where the weirdness is going.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also had elements of like Smile era Beach Boys with the vocals layered and the harmonies. It's just a wonderful album, and you really should check them out if you're not familiar with them. They're really nice people. They're really great musicians. They're obviously skilled beyond words. So yeah, Life in a Blender, by all means, please check them out. Go to Music Tap for that, for the reviews and for the video and for the Bob Mould review, and go to Pop Dose for the Peter Holsapple review and for some of the music that's from all of these great new releases. And finally, I'm sure you heard about this. I will reserve my opinion, but I will deliver the reportage. Actor Michael Shannon, who I'm sure you're very familiar yeah. with, who, as he himself put it brilliantly, is the character Mr. Green in that awful movie The Night Before. You know, people are sometimes put off by my quiet intensity, which is a perfect way of putting it. He's also a singer. And he, along with Jason Narduzzi, who, of course, is Bob Mould's bass player, as well as the leader of a band called Verbo, for the last 2 years, they've been going out and doing full performances of each REM album as they came out.
Oh, wow.
So they went out and they played the Murmur album in 2023. Last year, they went out and toured Reckoning. This year, they've done the 40th anniversary, of course, of Fables of the Reconstruction, yeah. which has been almost an obscene success. And I say obscene success because, as you and I, that album is very important to both of us. That album didn't get that kind of respect when it actually did come out. I'm happy for it. I'm happy for them to go out and play it. They appeared on what's that innocuous little guy's name? Jimmy Fallon. They appeared on his show, and they did Driver 8.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They played in – so you'll find this on YouTube. But you'll also find the video footage of them playing at the 40 Watt Club in Athens, and lo and behold, who gets on stage but all four members of REM doing Pretty Persuasion. Of all things, they're going to tour Europe with it now. And of course, next year, they're going to go out and do the 40th anniversary of Life's Rich Pageant. And so, you know, kudos to them for doing something that there is still obviously a market for and a great appreciation for. And I will tell you this, the musicianship was just stellar, you know. Now, if they, in fact, I would love to see somebody put up an entire show because I want to know if they did Kahootek.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
That's the one. There are some songs it's like, you know, I don't know if this band or that band ever played it live, but that's one I've always been curious about whether or not they ever did that in concert, you know. So there is all of the new music. Like I said, the only problem is I haven't picked up a guitar, and I do have some fear that I will not remember my own songs, let alone the songs that, you know, I've played in my sleep, so to speak. It's like when I hear Till There Was You, I know I can still play the guitar solo. I just don't know if I remember all the chords because they were those strange jazz chords. But we shall see. Who knows if it's now my time to actually retire from it and sell off all these guitars. If it is so, c'est la vie.
Nah, you know, it's like riding a bike, man. You'll be right back to it. And I'll tell you, last night, as a matter of fact, was the first time that I was on stage with a guitar in 4 years, something like that, maybe. And it was a blast. There's a guy here in town who was celebrating his 66th birthday. His name is Scott Allowell. And I met him when I first got here because I bought a guitar from him. You know, of all things, he put a guitar up on Facebook. It was an older Fender and just loved it. But met him and thought, boy, this guy, not only is he a really nice guy, but he's got a lot of stuff, a lot of, you know, gear, a lot of equipment. And we got to talking, and he said, yeah, I'm the lead singer and bass player for a Kiss tribute band called Almost Kiss. Well, it just so happens that one of my fellow hosts on KMBZ used to play in that band. He was the drummer for that band for a little while. So
did they kick him out because he had drug and alcohol problems and couldn't keep time?
Not this one, no. But but yeah, he. So yeah, I got to know Scott, and so Scott decided To throw himself a 66th birthday party at a place here in town called Knuckleheads. Knuckleheads used to be a garage. It was an actual Harley Davidson garage, but now it's been a music venue for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, something like that. So they played the garage, and he lined up 11 tribute bands that he had started for, you know, for different bands. One of them was the Cars, one of them was the Doobies, Almost Kiss played, I mean, all these different things. And each one of them played about three or four songs, and then that was the night. I mean, we started at 6:30, and we didn't end until after 11.
Wow.
But, and he was on stage for every single one of them, because they were all his tribute bands. But he's just, I mean, he's that ball of energy. Even at 66 years old, he is that guy who's going to go out there for 5 hours and stand on stage with a bass strapped around his neck and just hit it hard. So that was great. And they invited me up to play on a couple of songs, and that was a lot of fun as well.
Okay, well, what songs did you play on?
Well, okay, so the first one was during the Doobies set, and they were playing Listen to the Music, and I know that song like the back of my hand. I've been in two different bands that played that song, so that's one I could do in my sleep. And so they invited me up to do that one, and then at the end of the evening, just as a final sort of, you know, middle finger to the universe, he decided, and he actually introduced it exactly the right way. He went to the crowd, and he was like, "All right, what song do you want to get? You guys want to hear last?" And of course, everybody was like, "Freebird!"
Oh, no.
So we played Freebird, and it was all of us. I mean, every member of every one of those tribute bands. There had to be 15 guitars on stage, and yeah, we got through Freebird and didn't rehearse it. I mean, no, nothing. We just all knew the song, so it's like, go out and play this as well as we can. But it was a great night, and it was my second night at Knuckleheads in 3 days, because 2 days before, on Thursday, Roger Klein and the Peacemakers played there with an opening act called Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. And you know I'm a huge Roger Klein fan anyway, through the Refreshments and the Peacemakers and all of that stuff, so I was going to have a great time at the show. They killed, but Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts, if you're not familiar with them, get familiar with them. Excellent writing, excellent musicianship. We had seen them once before, and in between then and now, they've added a woman to the band who plays acoustic guitar and sings, and what a great addition. I mean, I loved them the first time we saw them, but now that she's in the band, I didn't catch her name, but now that she's in the band, they've got a whole new dimension, and she looks a little bit like Jo Beth Williams, so that didn't hurt either.
Yeah. God, I had a crush on her. Oh, even with the Big Chill association, she used to be on Guiding Light.
Yes.
God, what a mega babe. Oh, dear.
Yep.
So I have to say, John, full disclosure, I'm a little disappointed that you weren't on stage for the Kiss part of it, because, you know,
yeah.
I would imagine you opining and waxing poetic about, you know, playing guitar on, you know, maybe Flaming Youth or, you know, some. I'm saying this with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek, because weirdly enough, I've been listening to a ton of Kiss the last week or so.
Have you really?
Yeah. You know, it's been music, you know, on the way home from work after a stressful day. You want something to diffuse you and make you feel just a little bit better, you know. And now at this age, I tend to listen to things that are, you know, like comfort food, you know, and just make you feel better. And you know, Kiss records always make me laugh, basically, you know, and, you know, there are some songs by them I just absolutely love, just outright love. And I will, you know, die on that hill for, you know, songs like See You in Your Dreams Tonight, Hard Luck Woman, off of not one of my favorite albums, Rock and Roll Over, you know, Do You Love Me, which is probably my favorite song by them, off of my favorite album, Destroyer, Strutter, you know, stuff like that. And of course, Gene Simmons' mega gorgeous, perfect pop song masterpiece, See You Tonight, which is from his 1978 solo album. But if you can find the Kiss acoustic version from the Unplugged show in 96, if you aren't moved by that, you don't have a soul. That'll put tears in your eyes, how beautiful it is, how just perfect it is. But yeah, I've just been listening to a ton of Kiss. Now, oddly enough, tied in with all of this, I received a Facebook message from a guy that I worked with over 30 years ago at Roadrunner Records, who reached out after the longest time, you know, and it's really nice to reconnect with somebody who's, he's something, in my opinion, of what you would consider a legend in the music industry, especially in in the metal circles, because he's the guy who, you know, really helped put King Diamond on the map when he was a solo artist. He signed Sepultura, Obituary, you know, death metal from Florida. He put that on the map. He put Roadrunner on the map. And it was just so nice to hear from him. And I'm just kind of glad of a fresh audience to reconnect with an old friend. Oddly enough, he's from right here in Staten Island, from where I'm from. We're both from Eltingville. And like I said, it's kind of a nice little reconnection. And that's been one of the higher points of the last week. So, you know, I'll take that as a win. You know, you take all the little bits and pieces.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and the one thing I don't want to do, I mean, yes, there's a whole giant shit show going on in this country right now. I don't want to talk about it.
I'm so glad you said that, because neither do I, because you know what? The one big problem that I've had about all of this, and I mean all of this, is just a very old simple saying: civility costs nothing. Nobody wants to pay.
Yeah.
And I cannot in good conscience anymore. That's why I'm almost never ever on social media. Everybody knows everything. And
yes,
you know, it's like that really
pisses off those of us who do, by the way.
True. And the thing is, they proffer opinions as if it's gospel truth. And it's like, okay, if you're asking my opinion and then you're going to cut me down, then why am I even bothering in this end of the conversation? Right. I don't have the time for it. I don't have the patience. I don't have the wherewithal. And now I certainly don't have the care. I have bigger fish to fry. The more immediate things are more important to me. And politics isn't, because the one thing you and I did, I know this much, that we talked about on the last show was, we've been through all this before, but we've also been through plenty of elections and changes of presidencies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not the end of the world. I'm sorry. People just seem to be so unbelievably immersed in this. I don't even know what to call it. It's a mindset that is so alienating to me. And I'm not going to try and figure it out, because it's not my responsibility. I don't live there.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, Jen and I had that conversation the other night. We were sitting on the couch and, you know, going back and forth about whatever dumb shit had happened that day. I don't even remember what it was, but she just looked at me and said, you know, what can we do about it? And I said, nothing, not a damn thing. And she was like, exactly. So let's just not.
You know, the things that are worth getting worked up over is, you know, who really played lead guitar on the Destroyer album? Was it Ace Frehley or was it Bob Kulick? You know, we don't know. Was Ace even there? And I mean, not just physically there. You know, those are the important things in life. You know, which was the coolest permutation of the Casablanca Records labels? You know, I always maintained it was the first one, the blue one, you know, which always bothered me that I destroyed, no pun intended, my copies of the first album and Dressed to Kill, which were on that original label. Ooh, I hate myself for that. But yeah, I still remember my Kiss album numbers too. NBLP 7001. It's the first Kiss album. Casablanca Records, distributed by Warner Brothers. So, you know.
Well done.
Hey, I was a member of the Kiss Army. I don't deny that for a moment. So, you know. If I had kept my physical Kiss albums, I would still have the letter Paul Stanley wrote me. I don't know if I ever told that story on the show. All right. You know what? I'll put it in just for the sake of time, and since it fits into the context of everything. When I was 13, of course, as you know, in the Jewish faith, a young man has a bar mitzvah. It is his rite of passage. I think you're familiar with this.
Indeed.
And my mother, God rest her soul and God love her for this, she wanted to do something special, and she figured, I'm not going to write to the Kiss fan club or any of that stuff. She wrote to Alcoin Management and explained, you know, it's like, if there's something that you could do, my son would be thrilled beyond words. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I received from the Radisson Hotel in St. Paul, Minneapolis, a letter, handwritten, absolutely handwritten, dated December 1st, 1977. Dear Robert, we were thrilled to hear about your upcoming bar mitzvah. We wish you mazel tov and all the best. Hope to see you in the new year. Your friend, Paul Stanley.
Wow, that's great.
I mean, and this is why I will go to my grave always, always. I will fight to the death for Paul Stanley. I will fight to the death for Kiss, because the fact that he was in the biggest band in the world at the time and took that 5 minutes to write that letter, that was a handwritten letter. You know, that's the mistake. I had it framed for many years. And then, you know, when I was in my mid to late 20s, I just didn't even think about it anymore. So when my dad sold the house, it wasn't even in my mind anymore. But, you know, the fact that he took the time to do that for a 13-year-old kid meant the world to me, yeah. You know, and that's what will always make them one of the three greatest bands of all time, just by virtue of how they are with their fans.
I was going to say, I don't think there has ever been a band that was better to their fans than Kiss.
Maybe the Monkees.
Maybe. Yeah, that's true.
You know, especially at the Monkees conventions. But hey, all four original members of Kiss showed up for convention, and that's how you got the reunion. So, you know, but all I can say is this. Rob Ross uses Gibson guitars because he wants the best. You know, you wanted the best, you got the best. The hottest band in the world. As some dimwit actually did it, and we for a moment sold it in the record store when I was working there. This is in 85, and they were already unmasked and just very middle-of-the-road rock. They decided to use an acrostic and spell it out. KISS meant Knight in Satan's service.
Right.
Which, of course, Gene and Paul found hysterical. And Paul said, no, what KISS really means is Kaddish is so swell. You gotta love it. Stanley Eisen comes up with the trump card and makes it funny. I mean, we all know Gene is funny.
Yes.
Because he is. I mean, if you've ever met him, you know what his opening line is when he shakes your hand. Rob, you're a very powerful and handsome man. Thank you, Gene. I know this. Gazegazin, you know?
Indeed.
Well, I'm a big fan of those guys. I can't help it.
What a great place to leave it, man. We're going to end with that story because that's just the perfect ending to a perfect show. So thank you, Rob Ross, once again, my friend, and we will look forward to another Radio City coming up soon.
Well, thank you, my brother. It's been too long since we've done it. And to everybody who has been listening and will continue to listen, as always, we love you, we thank you, and we appreciate you. And please don't fret because we will have more new shows coming sooner than later. And everybody take care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you all soon. Thanks again.